So I don't know that this will be worthy of having somebody listen to sometime in the future, but you never know. Most of my best talks never got recorded, so they're just out there floating around, the ideas, maybe in somebody's head. Maybe they're still in my head somewhere too. So this talk is about Kobo Kori Dojo, right where you walk is your practice place. It seems like well, of course, right? Where I am, that's my practice place. And so much of the time, we're not where we are, right? Our mind is enjoying or not enjoying other vistas. Here we are, this first full day in our All Beings and Sangha Rohatsu Sesshin, practicing together in a new way, right? There are right now five of us in the Zendo in person. And then I see that there are another five people out joining us from an office or two and homes and, you know, finding places in their homes to be tucked in so that they can participate and be together. So we're the first time having a sesshin, a long sesshin where we're there and we're here and we're trying to be right where we are and be together in different places at the same time. So that sounds like definitely the setting for some Dogen fascicle. Maybe he imagined this experience that we're having. Or maybe he was having this experience and now we have to enjoy it more deliberately and with more high value minerals and glassware and things like that between us and the doing of it. So we've been studying the book Being Time by Shinshu Roberts, and I really enjoyed her talk with us when she zoomed in. And there were a few things that she brought forward that that I just would like to remember today. That was valuable how she was willing to talk about our life in very kind of mundane terms. And so one of the ways that she talked about our personal life, our personal experience of living, is that, you know, we have this thing, and it's kind of, it's like, it's your coin, was the term she used. Another term I like that another speaker had talked about was, this is your ticket. So in both cases, we think of it like a coin or a ticket as being something kind of valuable, representing a certain value. And Shinshu was saying, you know, here you are practicing the Buddha way. Somehow you found yourself into a Zendo cloud or a temple practice place. And somehow you find ease or some unlocking and sitting down on the ground. And there's something luring you to continue to investigate this. And so whether you've taken precepts or not, you're on this bodhisattva path. You're on this path of figuring out what it is to be a Buddha living in the world, just like Shakyamuni was working on. And that's why we're together this week, is to recall to ourselves the very real human being who eons ago left, stepped away from his family. Eventually he reconnected with his family, but stepped away from his family for a period of time, not knowing what the future held, and just said, I'm gonna sit here until I figure it out. And based on all the Dharma study he'd done prior to that, that was all in him. Like all the study we've done, it's all in us as we come to this day, today. And tomorrow, if we get tomorrow, to figure out what it's all about. And so Shinshu talked about having that coin and these bodhisattva practices as being the way you spend it. Right? Because it's your choice. Or some of us who have gotten involved in this, we often reflect to ourselves, I don't have a choice. Right? This is what I have to do. But you do have a choice. But it may be what you have to do. Right? In your heart, you may have to do it. Though there are many other options. And so we had a little note in here, but of course my sleeves are so long. It could be that it's, oh, here it is. So here we are, we're kind of in these like funny big black robes. Some of you have I remember a period of time where I was like wearing nothing but black pants and black sweaters and black shoes. And I went to visit my mom in California and she said, don't you wear anything but black? And so I think she bought me some clothes, maybe not my style, but I came back and I looked in my closet and I thought, there's a lot of black, there's no color in here. And there's a lot of beautiful colors. So, here we are, we chose to wear black. Why would we do that? What's going on with that? I think it's kind of a way to kind of turn in and not be distracted sometimes, by what we're wearing. Or not distract other people by what we're wearing. It's not something that's dark or evil, or it's just kind of a place of kind of calmness. And we went out, a number of us today, for a walk at 8:30 for an hour. And the reflection for me of being in a place where we sat the morning and we're mostly wearing dark colors and we're mostly being quiet is that wow, what a contrast to go out into the street and to be amongst all the activity of the city particularly, but it could be this way if we were in the country too. But then how vivid the colors are. You look down at your feet and there are these gorgeous ginkgo leaves. I could pick one of them up and probably just meditate on that, set it down and just kind of be with that for a long time. Or the contrast of some of the winter trees against the blue sky and the gray clouds. And just there's so much to be aware of. And so sometimes that quieting down, that allowing yourself to be in loose clothes, which just kind of cover you and keep you warm, is a way to kind of open up maybe to some experiences we might miss. And likewise, the forms that we're practicing, though they're altered forms because of COVID, is also the opportunity to open us up to the essential experience of being alive, being human beings, tasting the nuances of the food, really feeling when you're full, when you've had enough. Orioki, the way that we typically eat together during a sashin, there is a lot of not dramatic movement, but choreographed movement between the server and person receiving the food. And we can't do that, right? Because of COVID, there's a distance that we have to keep. But there's still the dance of that is still there. The choreography is still there, even if we aren't opening our bowls at the same time. We can just stop and see what's in the bowl and like really see it. How'd that get there? And we can even hold the bowl and have the experience of that. Like, how did this bowl come to be? And then if we're eating something warm, this morning we had nothing but cold food, but we'll have warm food later in the day. And so the idea of taking warm food into the body and just how that meets the body, that warmth to warmth. So there's so much richness to our life that the forms, the prescribed forms of sitting down when you're eating and like picking up one bowl and eating some of that and setting it down, and picking up another bowl, eating some of that, setting it down, just kind of allows that greater awareness of where you are, that hobokori dojo. Right, so the walking is a metaphor for everything. You know, when you're eating, when you're having a conversation with somebody, can we just completely stop and lean in and listen and hear and respond appropriately, skillfully? It's really hard to do. And where some of us are coming and going from the Zendo during Rahatsu, or we're even in a building, those of us that are in the Zendo and in the guest space, we're in a building where we're going to encounter other people. So it's not like the container is perfect. And the container is perfect because it's challenging us to really see ourselves in those connections we make. And as we become more present, maybe a little more sensitive, maybe a little more feeling. Sometimes that's a little hard when you go have a conversation with somebody or you encounter the cashier at the market or the child who won't stop crying, the dog that won't stop barking. So how do you need that? This practice, this Zen practice comes to us, doesn't guarantee us some heavenly abode, right? It's not saying, wait, be good now, get your payoff later. It's suggesting that our realization, our awakening is in the experience, the process of our lives. So there's that ticket, that valuable ticket. Here's your life. And you want it. Maybe you don't. Sometimes I look at something, it's so exquisite. It's so gorgeous that it's hard to keep looking at it. You know, or my husband, Kurt, he'll often take a bite of something and he'll kind of moan and he'll kind of go, that is too good. Right? And why can't he just enjoy it? You know, why can't I give that exquisite experience of what I'm looking at that's so beautiful, 2 minutes of my life, 5 minutes of my life to really immerse myself in it. What's better? why would I cut that off? Why don't I deserve that? You know, I do. But I have to see it. So I give myself these opportunities to be with you all and to sit for a week and not drive anywhere. I do my best not to look at the news. I do my best not to get into unnecessary conversations. You know, when we go to a formal monastery, literally everybody gets in a big room and the tanto reads off about 150 rules. And I'm kind of the mind that, you know, we're all adults and maybe we kind of all know what we should be doing, but maybe we don't, you know, because it's like every time you walk in, it's new and you're new or I'm new. So if I could just offer just some things to consider, and I'll use the term that Katagiri Roshi would use rather than saying, don't do that, which is what the Tanto Tassajara says, I'll say refrain from, right? So refrain from if you can for the next 6 days. So refrain from gossip. And refrain from judging others. Refrain from eating food of type or amount that's not healthy for you. Refrain from, if you have a habit of not getting enough sleep, refrain from succumbing to that habit. And put yourself in a position to be at ease so that you get enough rest. Refrain from standing while you eat. If we could do those, that would be pretty good. So we'll throw away the other 120 and we'll just kind of work with those for the week. And you know, maybe you have something that you're particularly wanting or needing to work on this week that I don't know about. So you might just kind of consider what little thing that might be. So I'll give you an example. Sometimes it's recommended during sesshin not to eat between meals. We kind of change that because people have all kinds of hangups about food. And usually there's food available pretty much all the time if you're sitting sesshin, but it's gonna be healthy food. But still, I've been at sesshin where I've seen people slipping out of their pockets candy and chewing their candy and stuff like that. So like if you know you have a habit like that, that's just kind of like, well, you know, see if you can set it down for the 5 or 6 days we're together. You know, and when the unconscious urge occurs to pull the candy out and kind of be in a different kind of space apart from the container of the sushi, you know, oh, gee, I'm itching for that Jolly Roger. Sort of see it. So maybe there's one thing, but I don't want you to feel heavy about it. I mean, there's enough that we got going on that, but you know, you might just sort of see what is that thing. So this kind of speaks to one of the points that Chinshu brought up. And she talked about it in terms of what we reach for. And so also in Zen practice, we often say, you know, there's no goal. There's no getting somewhere. There's no prize. And you know, here we are spending our valuable time doing this. And so this is, I'm going to just quote from Shin Shu, and hopefully I'm capturing this in the right light that she was trying to offer it. But she says, how we live our life is the most important thing, defined by your particular reaching. And your reaching is defined by your reaching. So defined by your particular reaching. That's the most important thing. Sometimes I think Ed S.B. Brown maybe talks about this a lot, about conversations with Suzuki Roshi, where Suzuki Roshi would try to kind of get him to come back to what's the most important point. And so Ed had to kind of keep coming back to, yeah, what's the most important point? And if you've enjoyed any of Ed's books, sometimes he'll talk, he's very into food. He was Tenzo for a good deal of his tenure and bread baker for a good deal of time at Tassajara. So he often tells food stories. One story that he had that somehow sticks in my mind is that they had a day off, a rare day off at Tassajara, and it's really hard work being the cook there. And so they wanted to go for a hike, he and a friend, but there was difficulty getting the food in. I'm not telling the story the wrong way, but getting food in. And so they wanted to like take something with them on their hike, their day off in the mountains. The only thing there was to take was a watermelon. So here they are in the mountains, taking a watermelon, you know, on their hike. And so they got to wherever they were gonna like stop and have their lunch, have their nourishment. And you know, they sliced into the watermelon and they said, okay, well, this is your little bit of watermelon soup. And they sipped up the juice. And then they sliced it and they said, okay, here's your watermelon steak. Have a bite of your steak. Oh, and there's watermelon for dessert. You know, so they like completely were in this process of like, what are we doing here with this one thing? What's going to satisfy us? And they kind of made a joke out of it. But defined by that reaching, what's the most important point? And so Ed was able to, with good humor, with his friend, enjoy a three-course watermelon meal. What could be better? What? Heaven on earth to do that. So she talks about, she tries to unpack for us this idea of sort of connecting, sending us out to this, the array that the Buddha or that Dogen talked about in our practice. And I think that this idea of Hobokori Dojo being right where you are in your practice place puts you in a position of being the eye, being the Dharma eye in whatever setting you're in, so that you can see that connection. You can be connected in your awareness of all that is currently happening. So that gorgeous ginkgo flower, that savoring of taste of something, oh, it's too good. You know, oh, that sky, so exquisite. You know, does the ginkgo leaf need for me to stop and see it? I need the ginkgo leaf to be there for me to experience my human self fully. So I think that's kind of what I wanted to share today as we start kind of more deepening and dropping. Just remember, it's okay to be in yourself. And it's really helpful to be with other people while we're on this process of bodhisattva, bodhicitta, opening up to our mind of awakening, working with that mind that's so strong, like the great oxen, you know, just pushing its way through. I want to eat that. You know, I want to go sit in the sun. Well, come back. Let's sit together and be comfortable in this human body. Let's sing to each other or hum to each other. Do an om to each other, chant together. So this morning, some of you were here. Alex was here in the Zendo, and I know Sato was online, but I heard that from somebody online that the chanting that conveyed from the Zendo to those of you on the cloud sounded really powerful and really nice. So that's how we can be in array. Like, who could imagine that through this vehicle that we could together impact somebody and have them be so impacted by our chanting together today. And then that person takes it to their workplace and to all the people that they touch, right? And the people that they interact with, go home and touch and do other things. Just sort of unceasing waves of benefit. Wow, that's really, really something. Right, so don't think that anything you do doesn't have import. It really does. No. Enjoy spending your coin. Right, there's an element of that coin imagery to me, though, about spending it means that you're giving it away, right? Yeah, holding on to it, like hand open. Means are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So I'm going to stop the recording and I'll just